Welcome to the Philosophy of Now podcast from Roots Media. In this podcast, we speak with thought leaders about their philosophy on life that doesn't merely define them in their past or doesn't come for their ambitions in the future, but is their life mantra at every moment, ever present, in their now. So join us on a journey of questions and deep thought that ultimately lead to one question that truly matters. What is their philosophy of now? And in the process of listening, maybe we'll introspect and we will meditate or even stumble upon our own. In this episode, we speak with Ira Trivedi. An author and acclaimed yoga instructor, she has truly become a pathbreaker in the yoga community with her ability to make spiritual philosophy and practice engaging for the modern world. The founder of Namami Yoga, a non-profit organization, she went on to start a phone app for yoga wellness practices and an online yoga studio. Her best-selling books about feminism and human emotions, her online courses, yoga retreats, yoga lessons, and articles have become attractive for all age groups. She doesn't shy away from speaking about gender, women, and youthful issues in her work. In this episode, she speaks about her journey into yoga, what she is grateful for, what yoga and spirituality means to her own struggles keeping discipline, what she feels the youth of today need to focus on, and how she keeps her mindset focused running a yoga organization in a capitalistic society. And of course, as always, we learn her own life mantra. So let's tap into her mindset and hopefully grow together. Well, thank you again for making time with us. So to start off, I think I'd love to ask, how did you, and this, I know we asked this before when we last talked, but how did you come in contact with yoga? How did you come in contact with the idea of both the physical and the asana aspects, as well as the more spiritual aspects of yoga?
So first of all, I think that coming from a, you know, deeply like a, you know, very a traditional Hindu family, spirituality had always been a part of my life, especially leading a Vedantic life. You know, we are a family of Brahmins, and this is the tradition that I had been raised in. So there was a lot of exposure to a lot of highly evolved souls, you know, a lot of great spiritual saints. I remember right from my childhood coming and visiting us, everyone from the, you know, Shankaracharyas from various parts of India, Swami, you know, different Swamis, whether it's from ISKCON, Chinmaya Mission, priests from various well-known temples, they would come and visit us at our home right from when I was a child. And I have had the privilege of living in all different parts of India. So wherever we were, we would meet these souls, we would visit temples. So my life was definitely steeped in this sort of an upbringing, you know. Then when I was, there was not ever a physical practice of yoga or formal education, but the journey started on my own when I started, you know, I was in my 20s and I had gone to Columbia Business School. I was living the life that perhaps I had dreamt on paper, you know, of making a lot of money, successful, all of that, but life somehow seemed empty. My path brought me back to yoga when I realized, when I just started searching, you know, I was reading books, going online, and definitely for me, the journey began from the physical, I can say that, you know, from the physical practice of asanas. Through that practice, I reached a deeply meditative state of mind. I started following Raja Yoga, which is a meditation and meditation of the mind. And it was an amalgamation. I think definitely it was a physical practice of asana plus a very disciplined practice of meditation that helped maybe clear a lot of the impressions that I had had, you know, a lot of negative impressions on my body that this lifetime had accumulated. And the path started from there. And this is how my journey started. I start exploring as well. You know, I think travel forms a fundamental part of search. You know, when you're searching physically, then you start searching mentally, emotionally. And that's why I went on pilgrimages. I went to Mount Kailash, even to in my search. Several pilgrimages I took to religious, spiritual places around the country. So yes, that's how it started for me.
Awesome. How was your experience in college when it comes to Colombia, or just being in the United States? Was that somewhere that you kind of rediscovered your roots? Was that somewhere that kind of
definitely
put you so distant?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think definitely realizing that this is a culture that I come from made me take it not for granted. I mean, made me take it less for granted.
Right. But what did it put you so distant away? Was the world that you were living in the, I guess you would say, quote unquote, the West, as we put it, was that the culture in the United States, in New York City, did it attract you back to your roots because it was so distant and you started realizing what was there? Or did you actually come in contact with yoga and it's, you know, you really got attracted to it in the United States?
No, I think I became curious about, hey, this culture which I take for granted, especially the yoga practice. You know, I hadn't done a lot of yoga by the time I'd come to the States, because yoga in India in the early 2000s and late 90s was thought of something that it was thought of what old people do. You know, there's nothing cool about yoga. I think yoga becoming so cool and sexy in the West has definitely brought yoga back to India amongst the youth, especially the youth. So I think the yoga practice, we took it for granted. The West took yoga, made it cool, sexy, and then made people here accept it like that. So I think it's had a very interesting place, interesting journey. Yoga has had an interesting journey. And I think definitely for me, as someone who's lived half my life in the West and half my life in India, like literally a 50-50 split, I feel like I've really had this wonderful experience of having taken the best of both worlds. You know, I really had a very, very deeply rooted Indian life, because I've spent half my life, and that too, all over India, not just urban India, you know, and then being in the West has made me look at everything from a different lens, you know, has made me look at everything from a more Western lens. And I think the Western lens is important. It's like bullet points. It summarizes things in a very clear and concise fashion. Whereas in India, sometimes that's not how we look at things, you know. It's like a very jarbled and very, you know, confusing look at things. So I think the West has learned how to present things in a very clear and beautiful form. And that's what looking at things from a Western lens taught me.
Can you explain what you mean? Like maybe give an example of what you mean by the Western's ability.
I think breaking down yoga into sequences, you know, that is something which is modern yoga. You know, I feel like a lot of Indian masters did that for Western audiences. For example, if you look at Shivananda Yoga, broken down into 12 postures, I think Swami Vishnu did that because he was teaching to people abroad. If you learn traditionally yoga here, it won't be broken down into postures like this, you know, into sequences like this. So I think that breaking down and putting things into sequences and putting things and categorizing them, that's a very Western thing. And I think that's what I meant by looking at things and understanding things from a Western lens.
Right. When it comes to, I guess, moving on where I see the track of, you know, your work, you started writing a lot of books. I guess it was less relevant to the world of yoga, but more relevant to, from what I see, feminism, concepts of love, novels, kind of pushing towards that world as well, in terms of talking stories about women, for women, woman empowerment sort of issues became more and more prevalent. Where did that stem from? How did that become important for you, writing these sort of stories or writing these sort of books?
Keshav, I think that was definitely part of my, the writing journey for me started a little early before the yoga journey. You know, my first book was published at the age of 19. That was always a streak in my life. You know, I think my grandmother was a very feminist writer. I come from a very anti-patriarchal culture. You know, we're three sisters. I had a brother who was much younger than us, but we grew up as three young girls. And I think this feminist strand always existed. And I think also having been in India and then moved to the US and comparing both of these upbringings that I had, I could see the problems that were in India. You know, I understood them because I had had a different experience. So I think this really helped me. This really, really helped me.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting because I think I would love to know how that transitioned into a love for yoga or the passion and the transition into it. Was that more fluid?
I think on a physical level, when I became a full-time writer, I had a lot of time and space. You know, when I was right after business school, when I was working for a company, there's no time or space, you know? And I think as a yogis and writers are very similar natures. It's a very introverted nature of self-examination, right? You need to know how to be alone to be a writer. You know how to sit down and write. As a yogi, you have to know how to sit down and do your practice, you know? You can't be driven by external events and meetings. And this is not the way that you have to spend your day. So I think a writer's nature allowed me the time and discipline to actually go into yogi nature. So I really do feel like I owe my writing journey and the kind of time and space I gave myself to write that allowed me to actually study yoga and go deeper into the yoga journey. If I'd continued on my corporate track, it would have been a problem. You know, it would have really been a problem for me because I don't think I would have had the kind of time and space one needs for yoga. You know, one needs to sort of understand and even discipline. As a writer, to write, you need immense discipline to be able to create, especially in today's distracted world. So I think that writing taught me a lot of that self-discipline, which I was able to bring into the yoga practice.
Yeah, you know, you speak about your like time in the corporate world. Can you maybe think of like a moment or a couple of moments, or maybe it was the whole time, where it really stuck out to you that here I am, you know, here I am in this world, in this sort of materialistic sphere, maybe, or maybe in a sphere that is making me complacent, and I need to go back to these roots. I need to go back into making my life more worthwhile. When did that really happen to you?
I was working at a private jet company, and I was, you know, I was in New York City. I was in the lap of luxury, literally in the lap of luxury, you know, flying up with private jets across the world, seeing the life of the most rich and the most famous people. And I realized that, hey, like, it's a little empty. You know, there has to be more than this. And that made me turn and understand and examine. I think one thing is for sure, having a deep curiosity is very important. Having a deep curiosity, you know, and I think that was super, super important for me to understand.
Yeah. Do you think of maybe a moment or something that, you know, whether it was at that place or any other moment that really pushed you to another direction where it was kind of like a brick wall for you, maybe where it was like, oh, a moment to kind of introspect and moments of reflect on your personal journey?
You know, I tell you, it seems a little, I wasn't, you know, when I was working, I actually ended up going to Bali. You know, I took almost, you know, I spent a week in Bali and decided to do this by myself. I'd actually gone for a very luxurious wedding, you know, a big fat Indian wedding. And I was in, you know, this was the peak of, like, this was, this wedding was a height of opulence. And right after this, I remember saying that, you know what, I really, you know, continuously surrounded by people, this big Indian wedding, celebrities, money, drugs, drinks, I mean, everything that you can imagine. And I decided, you know, after that, I was so tired, I would say. And I said, I want to spend a week in Bali by myself. I can't deal with, you know, it was like this utter sheer, yeah, it was crazy. And going and spending a week in Bali. And I think being in that quietude, spending a week by myself, no one else around. I was 20 years old. And I hadn't ever done something like this. You know, the age of 20 for someone to decide I want to spend a week by myself is rare, you know. And I think just that time, and there was a small meditation center, I remember, the Brahma Kumaris, which is a spiritual organization based in India. There was a small meditation center. I don't know, still don't know why it was there, or it's still there, by the way. And I went into that meditation center and I attended my first guided meditation, and there was no turning back for me. I spent that 1 week in Bali, and then I ended up extending it for 3 more weeks. I spent a month by myself. I came back to India and the search had begun. I ended up I found these couple of books around the house that were by Swami Shivananda. I read them. I still don't know how they got there. I think they were my grandfather's. I still don't understand. No one knows where they came from. I ended up Googling this place, and I just ended up saying that, you know what, I want to go to this ashram. I went, and yes, this is where I am. You know, this is how I got here. So.
Yeah, I think, you know, speaking of that, I think the journey is always really interesting, because, like, you know, when I speak with people like you, as well as kind of reflect on my own sort of journey into being attracted and taking spirituality seriously, it's almost what we call like karmic, where it was, you know, somehow things just came into place. It was all sort of meant to be, where this was supposed to happen, where
all the pieces fall together, you know.
Exactly.
Always fall together. And none of it is really none of it is really as, you know, it all comes together. At that point we don't realize it, but then later on we all realize that, wow, this was it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Let's speak about, you know, where you are right now in terms of, you know, taking and working and making this, you know, your I guess your initiatives in yoga a lot more seriously and impactful, right? Effective.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you know, one of my teachers told me when I first started, saying that, Ira, for 15 years, you must do karma yoga. You must not commercialize yoga. You must not try and make money out of yoga. Do whatever you want to, but don't make money out of yoga. Don't make this your livelihood. Because if you make yoga your livelihood, you'll approach it from a different sense for 15 years. After 15 years, you can do whatever you want. And I follow those principles. For 15 years, I never commercially looked at yoga, and I didn't look at yoga for paying my bills. You know, if someone paid me for yoga, it was fine. Otherwise, I never tried to start a business which was doing yoga. I had a foundation, I was doing things, but none of it, if there was a little bit of money I made, it was supporting my expenses. I never looked at it from a commercial lens. And it was only after, I would say, almost after 15 years, and this is about 3 years ago, after 18 years of being a yoga teacher, being a certified yoga teacher, today I am 37 years old, you know, and I got my first, you know, 38 almost, I got my first yoga certification when I was 21, you know, right after college. And this is when I started my yoga, the beginnings of my yoga journey were out of college. And I think around, it was 23, 24 that I got more serious. And imagine, after so many years, was when I actually now for the first time have begun to think about yoga in a more commercial way. And when I mean commercial way, I don't mean that I'm commercializing yoga, but I'm thinking about structuring it to make it financially viable, you know, as an enterprise. I don't want to use words that are, you know, enterprise and corporation are all negative, you know, or they are deemed as negative. But what I meant is that creating organizational structures where there's an engine, where there's teachers being trained, there's classes being conducted, there's multiple teachers who teach with me, and there's an engine. And that engine was not created for the 15 years. For 15 years, it was about me practicing and me learning. It took 15 years of that. So I tell a lot of young yoga teachers that whatever you're doing, don't leave. For 10 years, study yoga as a student and teach whatever you want, but don't take yoga as your career. After a decade of doing it, then you can consider leaving everything. Because if you start looking at yoga as a financial means, then it will just not only it'll disappoint you, and that'll leave you feeling agitated about yoga. So this is what happened. And I tell that to a lot of young yoga teachers today. A lot of young yoga teachers come to me saying, I'm an engineer, should I leave? And I said, no, don't leave your job. Continue doing what you're doing. Spend a decade as a yoga teacher, teach on the side, teach for fun, teach as volunteer work, but keep learning, but don't put pressure on yoga to pay your bills. Because if you do that, it's going to end up being problematic for you.
And would you, that's a very insightful thing to touch upon, where, kind of doing that, what we may call like thup, right? Of like 15 years of doing it, trying to work on it, on the craft of yoga, right? And doing it with the karma yogi mindset of not trying to take anything, or not becoming selfish or commercialized with it, capitalistic with it. Yet that whole idea of not looking at it with that angle, would you also say that on the opposite realm, that when you're testing yourself, you're kind of testing your karma yogi abilities or your inner ego and your mindset, your outlook, this was also necessary to purify it, in a sense.
I agree. And also I really think that, there's so many teachers being created and they say that, listen, I want to have a career in yoga. What they don't realize is when you try to make a living off of yoga, it's not easy. And it puts a lot of that's why there's apprenticeships. There's apprenticeships that people do for a long time before they actually start making money from this. So it's a little tough. Like the way that yogis were not meant to make, they were not meant to use yoga as a tool to make money. So it's a little tough, but I do think that, we'll get there.
And, how has your mindset changed from that 20-year-old taking on it? And then through that kind of taking on that sort of, I'm going to use the word thup again, 15 years of trying to, work with it without that consumer intention. Again, I know you're not a fan of that word. And now, where you are taking it seriously for the past 3 years as more of a trying to be an innovator, a flag bearer in that field.
It's hard. We started only during pandemic, a little bit before pandemic, and it's hard. It definitely has taught me a lot of new things because I have to deal with a lot more people. That's for sure. But I do feel like it's given me different facets of my life, and it's opened up a lot. I feel like it's opened up it's trying to have a running organization and helming that organization is something brand new for me, and especially doing it from a yoga perspective, trying to maintain the ethos of yoga, right? Trying to maintain the morals of trying to maintain the yums and niyams, I would say, while doing this was something for sure, which has been tough and challenging, but it's taught me so much. It's opened up a whole new realm, I would say, in my mind and in my capabilities. And I'm really grateful for it. So it has created a little bit of stress, I won't lie, on the body, on the mind, on my own practice. I don't get as much time for sadhana as I used to, and I can't prioritize it anymore. It's like having a child. When you have a child, you stop prioritizing yourself and you prioritize that child. And that's what I do have to do now. I've taught almost 50,000 people in the past over the pandemic, live. And there's been a lot of pandemic, as I said, has created a lot of demand for yoga because people need it more now than ever before. So it's been beautiful. I really, really, really appreciated it.
Yeah, I guess let's touch on that again. I know we spoke about it a little before. You said you talked to a lot of people or you've taught a lot of people, especially in the pandemic. What have you noticed when you speak to them or when you interact with them, when you're teaching them? What is the main source of the need for yoga? What is the main source of the calling for yoga in this pandemic?
Health. People, I think, mental health and physical health, both. Some people come because they've had COVID and they want to get better.
and they feel like yoga can help them. They don't feel like going to the gym. They have the same energy. And so they feel like yoga can boost their energy, which it can, without really aggravating their body. So a lot of it is mental health. A lot of people come because they're facing immense stress and change in their life. So it's both of them.
Mm. Yeah. I guess moving on in terms of your own personal journey, what do you think has been the biggest struggle for you in when it comes to not only this sphere of leading your own initiative, but more so, I guess, even in your own sadhana, as you said, right?
Personal life, I think personal life, that's a good one. It's my personal life because I feel like as a young woman in India, you know, the expectation is to get married, to get settled. And it's really hard when you're on a yoga journey to at the same time maintain romantic relationships or look at a life partner, you know, because yoga is a very, I feel like it's a very, very, it's a singular path, you know, you walk it alone. So as you're trying to do that, to then create space for someone else, so it was very challenging for me for a long time because there was a lot of pressure, you know, coming from a traditional Indian family, Hindu family, at the same time, it taught me a lot about yoga. And it gave me all these beautiful things, but it also had that tradition of, hey, listen, you have to get married. And I think trying to do that, I'm now engaged to a wonderful man. This happened just a few months ago.
Congrats.
But thank you. But this was a partner who, you know, who I found, you know, who supported that journey. And I'd come to a place in my practice where I could, where I could make space for another person, you know, it's, and when you have another person in your life, it's difficult to do that singular yoga journey, but I'm really happy that I feel like Madhu's a wonderful partner for me. So I feel like that was a huge struggle for a long time, trying to balance the personal and the yoga life together.
Mm. And this might sound a little weird to ask, but I try to get to this sort of questions as well. But if you had to point out a weakness in yourself, you know, during the struggles or during this path of yoga, what would you say would be something? And I ask this because I think it teaches a lot of other people after seeing how you've kind of either been able to work with it, you know, overcome it or deal with it. I guess in a sense of maybe mentally as well as maybe personally, what is that sort of thing that maybe you go through that you fight through, but you allow to, you also persevere over?
It was discipline, you know, it's discipline, especially in this distracted world that we live in. To maintain yogic discipline in your practice and your sadhana is very, very difficult. So I think this is definitely something that I have personally struggled with. And I, you know, and I still struggle, especially when you're trying to balance a lot on your plate. But I, you know, this is something I tell everyone that, you know, on your yoga journey, the most important thing for you is to be and maintain discipline, you know, and it's hard, it gets harder and harder.
Yeah. Speaking of yoga, I know we spoke about it a lot, but how would you define yoga for yourself? And I don't mean it, you know, define it in terms of the Yoga Sutras or the Bhagavad Gita, but define it for yourself through your journey. What has yoga given to you? What is yoga for you?
Gosh, that's a really tough question, Keshav. What is yoga for me? It's life, you know, yoga is life. It's a quest for meaning. That's what the yoga journey is. And that's what it's been to me.
Can you maybe like elaborate on that? Like, what do you mean by meaning of life, for example? Because like that could be for
it's
many.
It's given me a vehicle to explore life. That's what it's done. You know, it's really given me a vehicle to explore life. That's what it's done. You know, to explore life in its deepest way. That's what it's done. The yoga practice, asana, pranayama, meditation, all of it has given me that vehicle.
Mm. Yeah. You've also kind of led initiatives in like specific age groups, as well as specific communities to put forth yoga as far as what I've seen. What sort of age group or maybe realm of, you know, maybe culturally or gender wise that do you think maybe, yeah, we need to really push forth yoga here? Maybe it's amongst
across kids. All. I think okay. Everyone needs yoga today, you know, without a doubt. So I would say everyone needs it.
Yeah.
Everyone needs it. Yeah.
What do you think about the emphasis more and more on the asanas and the emphasis on?
It's good. I think as life gets more radsic, you know, we're leading a more and more radsic life, which has more and more demands. We're turning into a more masculine society, and that's what's happening. And I think that's, you know, it is what it is. And yoga helps us. It helps maintain the physical balance. COVID has taught us how important physical health is. So I think this is definitely something that yoga has given, and that's why yoga is so popular.
Mm. Yeah. This is another question that, you know, I like to ask almost all of what, like I said in the beginning. What would be your tips, advice, insight for the modern generation? What do you see maybe lacking in them, or what do you see maybe that they are doing well and you would like to push them forward in that? Not to remove yourself from it. I think you are also part of it in a sense. So like what yes, would...
I would say that, an emphasis on a pranayam practice is definitely something that can be done. Yoga asana practice is not for everyone. You know, I have to let you know that not all physical bodies are capable of it, because, you know, like modern day lifestyles may not allow you back pain, this, that, all of that. That's why a lot of other stuff coming in. But I do think that, pranayam and breath work is, especially because of COVID-19, COVID-19 has unleashed the fact that pranayam and breath work is very important.
Mm. And you mean that in the sense of relieving stress? Do you mean that more in the sense of?
All of it.
Okay. And I guess finally getting to the question that we kind of named this podcast after is the philosophy of now, but the way we've defined this word is that life mantra, that philosophy that you live by, not necessarily in your past, not necessarily in your future, though we talked about both here, but in your present, you know, when you're meditating in your now, what is that mantra that you want to live by, you know, that you're trying to live by every present moment that you're in the now, as we say, when we're meditating, what is that life mantra?
Be joyful, you know, be full of joy. And I think we sometimes even in the quest of yoga, we forget that, right? We're so focused on accomplishing a pose, maintaining discipline, you know, following these principles that we forget that you have to be joyful. So I think be joyful is so important. Be happy, be joyful.
Mm. And how important is that, not only in the pandemic, but I guess as a lifestyle, do you think? Like, is that, how does one make that a lifestyle, the act of being joyful?
Just being grateful for everything that we have. I think that's why gratitude is so important, by maintaining that principle of gratitude in our lives, we can really, really move forward.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess that is one more question I'd like to add is like, where do you see your mission, your drive in, let's say the next 5-10 years, like how are you looking ahead? Or are you not thinking about that at all?
I see people who plan their entire lives. I like to live life like, maybe 3-year buckets at a time. And I see for the next 3 years, having a nice balance, between a personal life. So for many, many years, it was just me by myself alone. And that was my journey. And now I've, let other people in to that energy. So I would say that there's going to be more emphasis on a personal life, more emphasis on building an organization and trying to make space for my own personal practice. Earlier I had many, many, many hours and space for a personal practice. Now I don't have that anymore, and that's okay. But that's the journey. You do it yourself and then you start leading others. So I'm excited to move forward. Looking forward to hearing the podcast. Thank you for sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Philosophy of Now podcast. For more content and conversations like this, please visit the Roots Media website and keep listening.